Wrenching control from the demon, I shoved Kamigoroshi back in its sheath and lurched away from the sleeping girl. Staggering outside, I pressed a palm to my face, breathing hard as I struggled to clear the rage and bloodlust from my mind. Hakaemono fought me, unwilling to give up, fury and violence still singing through my veins. Closing my eyes, I recalled the mantra my sensei taught me, chanting it like a sutra in my head. Be nothing. You are not a person. You are a weapon. A weapon does not feel. A weapon has no emotions to hinder or slow it down. Feel nothing. Regret nothing. You are but a shadow, empty and soulless. You are nothing. I am nothing, I whispered, and sensed Hakaemono's presence fading from my mind. I am a weapon in the hands of the Kage. I will not betray them or fail my mission. When I opened my eyes, I was fully in control. The anger, confusion, and doubt had been purged from my body, leaving me with a cold realization. I could not afford to lower my guard, to allow anything or anyone to distract me. Hakaemono had relinquished the fight for now, but this had been a chilling reminder of what was at stake. I'd stopped myself in time, but if the sword had tasted blood, I might have slaughtered the entire village before the demon was satisfied, starting with the very girl I was supposed to protect. Yumeko. I narrowed my eyes. Yumeko was a distraction. Intriguing, confusing, and dangerous. I didn't know why she affected me so much, but it couldn't go on. Hakaemono had been biding its time, luring me into a false sense of security before attempting to seize control. It had almost worked. I could not let that happen again. A soft chime cut through the silence. I looked up. A monk stood in the road that snaked past the house, his form hazy and blurred in the moonlight. He wore black robes, a wide-brimmed straw hat, and carried a staff with four metal rings dangling from the top. Exactly as Yumeko had said. Without taking his eyes from me, he raised his staff, pointed it down the path, and disappeared. Wary, but knowing omens from the dead could not be ignored, I crept around the house, peering down the slope into the graveyard. It was no longer empty. The entire cemetery glowed with a strange, sickly green light that illuminated the dozens of bodies shambling between graves. They were naked, emaciated creatures with stick-like limbs and bloated, distended bellies. Vaguely human, they walked hunched over or crawled through the dirt like animals, their gaping mouths showing rows of jagged, broken teeth. Gaki. I crouched in the shadows of the hut, realizing my mistake. This village was haunted, but not by a single yure. Gaki were the spirits of greedy or wicked humans who had died and returned cursed with eternal hunger. No matter how much they ate, they were always starving, and nothing could satisfy them. They were creatures to be pitied, and a single gaki wasn't normally considered dangerous, but if no food could be found, they were known to turn violent, seeking anything, living or dead, to quell their agonizing hunger. Watching the gaki shuffle between gravestones, a cold fury began creeping through my veins at the realization, fed by Hakaemono. The villagers had known about this. Now I understood the fear and anticipation. We weren't honored guests, as the headman would have us believe. We were sacrifices to the gaki. Carefully I drew back, and suddenly realized I was not alone. The monk stood beside me, also gazing down at the roaming gaki, his face hidden in the shadows of his hat. Before I could do anything, he raised his staff, the metal rings glimmering in the darkness, and brought it down with a thump in the dirt. The rings chimed, a metallic jangle that echoed like a gong in the silence, and as one, the Gaki whirled, their hollow, burning eyes fixed on me. I leaped away as, with howls and piercing shrieks, the Gaki rushed forward, scuttling over the bamboo fence and swarming up the rise. Darting into the hut, I ignored the snoring Ronin and hurried to Yumeko, grabbing her by an arm. "Yumeko!" She blinked as I hauled her upright, her eyes wide with astonishment as I set her on her feet. "Get up!"
"Tatsumi, what are you..."
A shriek interrupted her as a twisted, lanky form appeared in the open doorway. Mouth gaping, the Gaki screamed and lunged at us, curved nails grasping like bird talons. Yumeko gasped, and I leapt between them, Kamigoroshi flashing from its sheath. The blade sliced through the Gaki's bony chest, and the tortured spirit wailed as it shivered into tendrils of black-green mist and writhed away.
"Get the Ronin on his feet!"
I called, as more Gaki appeared through the frame, eyes blazing with madness and hunger. Planting myself in the doorway, I met them with my sword drawn, blocking the way in. Hakaemono, its rage forgotten, flared with excitement at the prospect of killing, bathing the mob in purple light. Howling, the Gaki lunged, teeth bared, claws snatching at me. I cut them down as they surged forward, slicing through limbs and heads alike, splitting stick-like bodies in two. The Gaki showed no fear or self-preservation as they came forward, throwing themselves on my blade with mindless fury, their consuming hunger driving them mad. Even if I cut off a limb, the owner would still press forward, raking with the other, or trying to bite me if both were gone. They dissolved into ethereal mist as they were destroyed, but there were always more, a seemingly endless horde crowding the tiny entrance of the hut. A talon got through my defenses and ripped a gash across my neck, and the smell of blood seemed to drive the mob into an even greater frenzy. Something buzzed by my ear, inches from the side of my face, and an arrow thumped into a Gaki's forehead, sending it writhing into mist. As I slashed through another, a second arrow flashed between my arms, and a Gaki howled as it disappeared. Through the chaos and fury of battle, I vaguely realized that the Ronin either had perfect aim and timing to shoot through a doorway with me still in front of it, or he was getting insanely lucky.
"What are these things?" I heard Yumeko cry, somewhere behind me. "What do they want?"
"Gaki!" the Ronin called back, as another arrow buzzed along my ribs and hit one in its bloated stomach. "Hungry ghosts! You can't reason with them. Poor bastards are starving and will try to eat anything, including us."
Another talon got through and latched onto my sleeve, ripping through cloth and taking a bit of skin along with it.
Hakaemono snarled in rage and surged up, urging me to let it go, to release its power and slaughter the pathetic crowd before us. I ignored it, pushing the demon's influence down, not trusting myself or the blade right now. Something larger than an arrow flew past my head and hit a Gaki in the face. It staggered back as a large daikon radish dropped to the ground in front of it. With a snarl, the Gaki ignored the vegetable and flew at me again, and Hakaemono hissed with pleasure as the sword cut through the skinny neck. The head fell, bounced once beside the radish, and dissolved into mist. Several more food offerings sailed past my shoulders and swinging arms into the crowd of Gaki, who ignored or even batted them away.
"I don't think they're interested in regular food,"
Yumeko observed, as I gritted my teeth and wished my companions would stop hurling things past my head.
"I think they just want to eat us!"
There was a loud rustle above me, and Yumeko let out a yelp.
"Okame! They're coming in through the roof!"
"Damn it!" There was the hiss of a bowstring, a thump, and a screech above me as a Gaki met its end. "More incoming!" the Ronin shouted, as the sound of thatch tearing echoed overhead, and bits of straw began drifting around me. "Hey, Kage, how's the mob looking on your end?" I sliced down two Gaki that had rushed forward, catching a split-second glance of the numbers beyond. "About a dozen left,"
I panted, jerking back to avoid gucky claws tearing open my face.
Just keep them off me for a few more seconds, and protect Yumiko!
More hisses and shrieks rang out behind me, but I couldn't turn from the mob at the door. I heard scuttling feet, the ronin swearing, and then a cry from Yumiko that sent a chill through my stomach. Beheading the last gaki, I whirled, ready to rush to her defense, hoping I wouldn't see her lifeless body on the floor, a pair of monsters ripping it to pieces. The ronin lay sprawled on his back near the fire pit, his bow held in front of him as if to ward something away. Yumiko stood beside him with her tanto outstretched, the remnants of green mist coiling around her as it vanished on the breeze. Her sleeve was torn, ripped by grasping claws, but there didn't seem to be any blood.
"Is that the last of them?"
she panted, looking at me. I nodded once and sheathed kamigoroshi, feeling a strange flicker of emotion in my chest. Seeing her alive and unharmed, was this relief I felt?
"Tatsumi!"
Yumeko stepped forward, her eyes gazing worriedly at the side of my neck where the gaki had clawed it. I could feel blood from the torn flesh beginning to seep into my collar. My arm, too, was starting to drip blood on the wooden planks.
"Before we do anything, we should take care of those. Do you have any medicine left?"
She took another step toward me, and I remembered her touch, cool and soft, sliding over my skin. So unlike the healers of the Shadow Clan. They took care of my wounds with quick and brutal efficiency, sparing me no discomfort. As with everything in my life, I had come to see the pain that came from their ministrations as normal. As Ichido-sensei often said, pain was a good thing. It meant I was still alive. But with Yumeko, that had been the first time in recent memory that another person had touched me without hurting me. I stiffened and drew away from her.
"No distractions," I reminded myself. "No emotion, no weaknesses."
If I let myself fall under this girl's spell, craving a touch that wasn't painful, Hakaemono would latch on to that flaw and turn me into a demon.
"Don't!"
I warned in a cold voice, and she halted, blinking in confusion.
"Don't come near me,"
I told her, backing away.
"I don't need your help. I'll take care of it myself."
Her brow furrowed, puzzlement and something else going through her eyes. Ignoring that look and the vague squeezing sensation in my chest, I brushed past her toward the full water bucket in the corner of the hut. I had my mission, and I would not falter. Nothing mattered except retrieving the scroll and returning to Lady Hanshō. A weapon did not question the demands of its owners or the purpose for which it was created. A weapon existed only to obey and to kill.
"Oi!"
the ronin demanded as I walked away, pointing to his face and the shallow cuts across his skin.
"What about me? This isn't kabuki makeup, you know?"
"Why would I think it's kabuki makeup, Okame-san?" he sighed.
"Never mind."
I watched Yumeko take a cloth from her obi and walk over to the ronin, then crouch down to look at his face.
"What about the gaki?"
she asked, dabbing at his cheek.
"Do you think there could be more out there?" "I sure hope not. Ite!"
he flinched back from her administrations, making her frown.
"Damn hungry ghosts. Well, come morning, I know several farmers who are going to die screaming for mercy."
Yumeko lowered the cloth, her eyes going wide.
"Why?" "Yumeko-chan."
The ronin shook his head in exasperation.
"This was a setup, if I've ever seen one. That headman knew about the gaki. Hell, the whole village did. We were bait. They might as well have tied a bell around our necks. I know it, and Kage-san knows it. Right, samurai?"
"They were expecting us to die," I agreed, pressing salve to my own wound. "That's why they were so eager to have us spend the night, so the gaki would eat us and leave the village alone."
"Yep,"
the ronin gave a grim nod.
"Only now I'm very much alive and a lot angry."
He took the cloth from Yumiko, then stood and sauntered over to my corner, gazing down at me.
"So, Kage-san," he began, "I think a bit of retribution is in order. What say we go kick down the headman's door, stick his head on a pike for the gaki, and burn this whole cursed place to the ground?"
19. Talking to Yurei. "He's not serious." I stared at the ronin who stood over Tatsumi expectantly. Though Okame wore a grim smile, his eyes were flat and dangerous, promising reprisal. He was entirely serious. "Okame-san, you can't," I protested. "They're not even armed. We can't slaughter these people in their homes."
"You might not be able to."
Okame's evil smile grew wider, showing those slightly pointed canines.
"I, however, don't take kindly to being fed to gaki, especially by treacherous, lying farmers. At the very least, I think the headman's house should be razed and his head stuck on a post at the edge of town, as a warning to other travelers. What do you say, Kage?"
Tatsumi wound a cloth strip around his wounded arm and used his teeth to tug it tight.
"No."
"No?"
The ronin gaped at him, even as I slumped in relief.
"Why the hell not? Aren't you a samurai? These peasants just tried to kill us."
"My mission is not to burn down villages." Tatsumi didn't look up. "It would be a waste of time. Stay and take your vengeance if you wish. It doesn't matter to me. Yumeko and I will be leaving this place at dawn." The ronin gave a disgusted snort.
"Suit yourself," he muttered. "I suppose that's poetic justice, though. Let these peasants get eaten by their own hungry ghosts. I bet in a few years there won't be a village left at all, just a graveyard full of gaki."
"But why are there so many gaki around?" I wondered. "Where do they come from? Do they just pop out of the ground, starving and cranky?"
"Gaki are the souls of humans who were greedy in life, whose selfishness caused great harm," Tatsumi said. "They are being punished for their greed and will continue to be eternally hungry until they have suffered enough to move on."
"But the villagers here were the complete opposite of greedy," I argued. "You saw them. They were almost frantic to give things away." Okame shrugged.
"Maybe they're hoping not to come back as gaki when they're inevitably eaten. There's probably a bad joke in there somewhere, but I'm too tired to figure it out."
I shook my head. "Something is wrong here," I murmured, walking to the door to stare down the path. "There's more to this village and the gaki than we're seeing. And I bet that monk has something to do with it."
"Monk?"
I heard the frown in Okame's voice.
"What monk?"
"The Yurei who... Never mind. We should talk to the headman," I said, turning back. Okame looked incredulous, but it was Tatsumi's gaze I sought, meeting his eyes. "I'm thinking he can tell us what's going on. We already survived the attack. They're not going to expect us to go marching back through the village, not when we were supposed to be eaten by gaki. I bet he'll explain everything now." Tatsumi didn't answer, and I frowned at him. "Don't you want to know what's going on, Tatsumi? Aren't you even a little curious?"
"No."
"Well, I am."
"I am too,"
Okame announced to my surprise.
"Now that you mention it, I sure would like to have a chat with our friendly headman and ask why he's feeding travelers to the resident gaki. In fact, I think we should go right now."
He strode to the doorway and peered out, dark eyes searching.
"I don't see any hungry ghosts wandering around," he muttered. "And if we do run into more, we know they can be killed or banished or whatever."
He looked back, a challenging smirk crossing his face.
"To the headman's house, then. You coming or not, Kage-san?"
Tatsumi continued to say nothing, his expression blank as he watched us. Finally, he rose gracefully to his feet, slid kamigoroshi through his belt, and glided across the floor. I felt a strange tingle in the pit of my stomach, my heartbeat quickening as he drew close.
Let's do this quickly.
The villagers watched us as we marched down the path toward the headman's house. No one had slept tonight, it appeared. Not a soul was in the open, but I saw them peering through the slats in their windows, eyes wide with amazement and fear. Clearly, they hadn't expected us to survive the Gaki attack, and they were wisely staying out of reach. No one challenged us as we strolled through the village, past the headman's front gate and up the steps to his house. Only now did I notice that his door was made of heavy, reinforced wood, and that several long gashes had been raked across the surface. Unsurprisingly, it was barred from the inside. Okame rattled it a couple times before stepping back with a dark smile.
Kage-san?
He glanced at Tatsumi and gestured to the door.
Would you like to do the honors?
Tatsumi's sword flashed from its sheath, slicing through the thick wood like it was made of rice paper. Stepping forward, Okame raised one finger and tapped the surface, and the doors swung back with a groan. Warily, we stepped into the house. The entryway was empty, but a faint light came from farther inside, flickering over the walls and floors. Sliding open a panel, we saw the headman kneeling in the center of the floor, a lit brazier casting his features in a red glow. As soon as the door opened, he fell forward, prostrating himself to the floor, pressing his face into the wood.
Mercy!
His muffled voice floated up from the floor, shaking and terrified.
Have mercy, my lords. Kill me if you must, but spare the village. They don't deserve your wrath.
They don't?
Okame crossed his arms.
So, you're telling me that they didn't try to feed us to the Gaki? That they were completely ignorant of what was happening tonight?
He snorted in obvious disbelief.
Well, don't I feel foolish, thinking this whole village was setting us up to get eaten?
I frowned at him. But I thought they were setting us up to be eaten. That's why they were... Oh, sarcasm again. I see.
Please.
The headman didn't lift his face from the boards.
Have mercy. We were desperate. You've seen what we face. You don't know what it's like, living with those creatures. We don't know what else to do.
They're not unkillable.
This from Tatsumi, his voice hard and unimpressed.
If your people would take a stand to destroy them, you wouldn't have so many Gaki wandering around.
We've tried. We've tried killing them, burning them, cutting off their limbs, trapping them underground. No matter what we do, no matter how many we kill, they always come back.
The headman clenched his fists on the floor in distress.
It's part of the curse that damned monk placed on us, and now we're doomed to be haunted by Gaki for the rest of our days and beyond.
Ah, now things started to make sense. What curse? I asked, stepping forward. We've seen the monk. Is he the one responsible for the Gaki?
You've seen him? Merciful Jinkei, will he never be satisfied?
The headman shuddered violently and sat up, closing his eyes.
I suppose there is no point in hiding it anymore,
he whispered.
Please, sit down, and I will tell you our village's greatest secret and greatest shame.
Okame and I edged forward and knelt on the tatami mats. Tatsumi chose to remain standing, hovering in the doorway, though the headman didn't seem to notice him.
This village,
he began,
has always been prosperous. The stories said that when my great-great-grandfather was headman, he made a bargain with Ojinari, the kami of the harvest, that as long as they took care of the land, it would always be fertile. Even after the rice tax at the end of the season, after the daimyo took his share of the harvest, the village always had enough to eat. The fields never withered, never dried out. The streams and lakes always yielded fish, and the gardens, small as they were, always produced a plentiful bounty. We were never rich, but we never went hungry. In this, we knew we were lucky. Far more fortunate than other villages that face starvation every winter, and we thanked the Kami for blessing the land. However, as the decades passed, the villagers began to fear that others might discover their wealth of food and try to take it from them. We are a small village, isolated from the rest of the world. If word got out, Ronin or bandits might descend upon us in waves and take all our food for themselves. The village would never have peace again. Such was our thinking, flawed as it was. Even though we continued to have bountiful harvests, we began hoarding our food, hiding it away like squirrels burying their nuts. The few travelers that stumbled upon the village were told that we were but poor farmers who could barely feed ourselves, and were sent away with nothing. And then, one night in the coldest of the winter's months, a monk passed through the village. He went from house to house, asking for a bowl of rice, a single potato, anything that we could spare. The village turned him away. My great-grandfather ordered everyone to bar their doors and ignore the monk until he left. For 3 days he stayed around the village, sitting in the snow with nothing but his hat and robes to keep him warm. He would offer to pray for loved ones, to say a blessing over the fields, in exchange for a bite of food. He was ignored. No one gave him anything. They pretended not to hear him, not to see that he was starving, though he never uttered a word of complaint. 3 days later, they found him sitting outside the headman's door, frozen stiff. He clutched a strip of paper in one stiff hand, written in blood from his own fingers, cursing our greed. 3 months after he was buried in the cemetery outside town, a young farmer's daughter fell on a commissicle and died. She, too, was buried in the graveyard with the rest of the dead. But that night, she returned, starving and violent. She broke into her former home and tore her family to pieces. The next month, the family returned as well, wretched and wandering, seeking warm flesh to consume, and more lives were lost to their terrible hunger. So began the cycle.
The headman finished, his eyes dark and haunted.
Every month, on the final 3 nights, one for each day we left the monk to starve, the hungry ghosts rise from their graves to wander the village. They are not interested in normal food. Offerings of rice, vegetables, or sake are ignored. They hunger only for living flesh, consuming those who were once kin. The Gaki you saw tonight, those are our dead loved ones, our families, all who perished after that monk drew his last breath outside this door. He is an onryo, a grudge spirit, and his curse continues to punish us for the greed of our ancestors.
Why don't you just leave?
Okame asked when the headman was finished.
Seems like an easy solution. Pack up and go find a new village. Leave the graveyard and your hungry ghost problems behind.
It's not that simple.
The headman shook his head.
Some have tried to flee the village, of course, but the curse follows them. Gaki stalk their footsteps, the ghosts of their families trailing them wherever they go, appearing every night instead of the last 3. The ones who try to flee either return to the village in terror, or they die and return as hungry ghosts themselves.
The headman looked out the door with bleak, dead eyes.
There is no escape. We are trapped here. And the curse will continue until there is no one left, until the Gaki are all that remain of us.
Huh.
Abruptly, Okame rose to his feet.
Well, I was thinking about killing you for throwing us to the Gaki, but on second thought it seems your lives are pretty awful as is.
He glanced at me and smirked.
So, what say we get out of here before the curse latches onto us?
Can we? Tatsumi wondered, his eyes grim. Will we be stalked by Gaki ourselves if we try to leave?
No,
the headman said dully.
Your ancestors did not anger the monk. The curse will not follow you. You can leave and not look back. I would not blame you, of course. This is our punishment, no one else's.
Has anyone tried talking to him? I asked, and those dead eyes shifted to me. The monk? His ghost is still hanging around.
The monk?
A shadow of real terror crossed the man's face.
We've occasionally seen glimpses of him around the village,
he said.
But he disappears before we can speak to him. We think it's more an effect of the curse, an echo of the monk, not the ghost himself.
He shivered.
The Onryo, we've seen him in the cemetery sometimes, a glowing spirit in white, walking among the graves. But none of us dare venture close. The Gaki would tear us to pieces.
And he only appears when the Gaki come out? I asked.
Yes. It is as if he wishes to see our misery and terror, to make certain we are suffering.
The headman sighed.
I cannot blame his anger. Our ancestors did him a great wrong. But it pains me, knowing I am destined to become a wretched thing that preys on my own family. I cannot even take my own life if I am simply to rise as one of them.
You may go,
Tatsumi said in a warning voice from the hallway, as if realizing what I was thinking. I pretended not to hear him and rose, turning to face my companions. We have to help them.
What?
Okame gave me a look of disbelief.
March through a cemetery crawling with Gaki to talk to a ghost? In case you didn't notice, I was almost eaten a few minutes ago. I could really go the rest of my life without having to experience the real thing.
I ignored the Ronin, locking eyes with Tatsumi, who was leaning against the doorframe with his arms crossed. We have to do this, Tatsumi-san. After hearing their story, how can we walk away now? These people have suffered enough. They aren't the targets of his wrath any longer. If we could just talk to the monk, maybe we could convince him to lift the curse.
Yumeko.
Tatsumi's gaze was hard, and he shook his head.
Grudge spirits can't be reasoned with,
he said in a grave voice.
Their anger has consumed them, and their vengeance can never be satisfied. If the monk is truly an Onryo, you won't have any hope of placating it, and it could very well turn its wrath on you.
Fear prickled my stomach. I'm willing to take that chance, I said. It won't take long. I just need someone to keep the Gaki away while I talk to the monk. This is the last night of the month, I reminded him as his eyes narrowed. It will be the only time we can talk to him. When dawn comes, he'll disappear with the Gaki and we'll lose our chance to lift the curse. Tatsumi held my gaze a moment longer, then let out a breath.
You're going to talk to him with or without me, aren't you?
He murmured. I nodded. I might not be able to wield a sword or shoot an arrow, I told him, but I can talk to ghosts and kami. I want to help, and this is something I can do. He sighed again and glanced out the door.
We don't have much time,
he said, making my heart leap in my chest.
When dawn comes, spirits tend to fade when the first light breaks over the horizon. If we're going to speak to the monk, we should do it now.
Okame groaned.
Hold on,
he growled as we turned toward the door. After pulling the sake gourd from his obi, he yanked off the top and tipped the container upside down into his open mouth, emptying it fully. He wiped his lips, then tossed the bottle at the headman and turned back to us with a grin.
Okay, now, I'm ready.
The village was silent as we walked back outside. Overhead, the moon blazed down, outlining the houses in silver and casting hazy light over the distant rice paddies. I didn't glimpse any Gaki wandering about, but as we drew closer to the graveyard, I could see the faint green light coming from the bottom of the rise. We sidled around the wall of the guest house, then peered down the slope. The Gaki were back, or a few of them were anyway. Certainly not in the numbers that had swarmed us earlier, but more than I was expecting, considering Tatsumi had wiped them all out. And we had been inside the hut when they attacked, which had allowed the demon slayer to deal with them one at a time. Out in the open, fending off a huge mob would be much more difficult.
"And you want us to go down there?"
Okame sighed and made a face as he stared at the figures lurching about.
"Ugh, this isn't gonna be fun, but lead the way."
"Wait." Tatsumi held out his arm, stopping us. "We may not have to fight."
I glanced at him. He hesitated, as if struggling with himself, then exhaled.
"If we march down there in plain sight, the Gaki will be on us in a heartbeat. However, I might be able to perform a technique that will render us unseen for a short while."
"Huh."
Okame crossed his arms.
"So you are Kami-touched, after all." "I thought so. Though the creepy glowing sword was a huge hint."
He spared a glance at the black-clad samurai behind us and dramatically lowered his voice as he leaned in.
"There are stories," he told me, "that if a Kage child is born Kami-touched, it is taken away and raised to become a shinobi."
I frowned. "What are shinobi?"
"Shadow warriors. Secret assassins that strike from the darkness, cutting your throat from behind or in your sleep."
Okame snorted.
"Every clan employs them. Don't let all that talk of honor on the battlefield fool you otherwise. But there are stories that the Kage shinobi have the ability to pass through walls, to become shadows themselves, or to turn invisible."
"There are also stories," Tatsumi said in a soft, lethal voice, "that those who speak of those shinobi vanish and are never seen again."
"Good thing I don't believe wild tales, then."
A faint chime shivered into the air from the direction of the graveyard. We turned, peering down the rise. A ghostly figure in white was walking through the cemetery, straw hat and staff bobbing as he moved between headstones, passing shambling Gaki, who paid him no attention. He moved slowly, purposefully, trailing fading tendrils of mist that curled into the air before he himself walked behind a large cedar trunk and disappeared.
"There he goes," I whispered and glanced at the dark warrior behind Okame. "Tatsumi, you said you could get us down there without having to fight?" He drew back a step, his gaze solemn as he peered down the rise.
"Yes, but there are a few conditions. The spell only works if we ourselves remain silent and unnoticed. Anything louder than a whisper will cause the illusion to break, as will any sudden movement. Looking directly into a Gaki's eyes or drawing its attention will also dissolve the spell. So be quiet, keep your head down, and stay close to me. Can you do that?"
"What about me?"
Okame demanded. Tatsumi gave him a cold look.
"The more people that go down there, the harder it will be to maintain the spell. I'm already stretching the limit of what I can do with one other. Two would be setting us up for failure. It would be better for us all if you stayed here."
"Trying to get rid of me, Kage-san? I'm wounded. It would be such a waste if I was eaten by a Gaki."
Tatsumi narrowed his eyes.
"Your swordsmanship is lacking," he said bluntly. "You would be no use to us among the Gaki should they see through the spell. Trying to protect Yumeko with your blade would be futile and would put you both in harm's way.
Okame sniffed.
You don't have to insult me, Kage-san. I don't have the right to demand satisfaction anymore, but I can be offended. In fact, I think I am.
You are a better shot with your bow, Tatsumi continued, as if the other hadn't said anything. If the spell fails and the Gaki attack, it would be prudent for you to be farther away, covering our escape. You can kill the Gaki before they get to us, and I won't have to worry about protecting you and Yumeko should the worst happen.
I suppose you have a good point, much as it pains me to admit it.
Okame crossed his arms with a sigh.
Fine. I don't like the idea, but I know as much about magic as I do flower arranging. I'll stay back here, put an arrow through the skull of any Gaki that gets too close. Yumeko-chan.
He nodded at me, smiling.
Good luck. Don't get eaten. You were just starting to make my life interesting.
You be careful, too, I told him, and turned to the samurai. All right, Tatsumi, I'm ready. What do I have to do? He hesitated once more, then held out a hand, palm turned up.
We have to stay connected, he told me.
And for some strange reason, my stomach fluttered like a swarm of moths were set loose within.
The spell will cover both of us, but it isn't meant to be used on a group. If we get separated, the Gaki will be able to see you, so don't let go, no matter what.
I nodded, took a quiet breath, and placed my hand in his. His palm was rough with calluses, but the fingers curling over mine were long and slender, almost elegant. My heartbeat quickened, and the moths in my belly swirled even more frantically before settling into an agitated fluttering. Tatsumi had gone perfectly still, staring at our clasped hands, as if fighting his instincts to pull away. I peeked at his face and saw a flicker of emotion in those purple eyes, a hint of uncertainty and the barest shadow of fear. But only for a moment, then his expression shut down, that icy mask dropping into place. Bringing two fingers to his face with his other hand, he half-closed his eyes and murmured a chant using words I didn't understand. A whisper of power went through the air, centered on Tatsumi. It swirled around us, cold and caressing, seeming to muffle sound and make the shadows around us even darker. Somewhere off to the side, Okame uttered a breathless curse. I suddenly felt very strange, as if my body wasn't quite solid, and the moonlight blazing down overhead was passing right through me. Tatsumi opened his eyes. The glimmering violet orbs peered down at me, but I could not see my reflection within.
Let's go, he whispered. Remember, stay close, keep your eyes off the Gaki, and don't let go of my hand. Are you ready?
I nodded, tightening my fingers around his. He turned, and together we walked down the narrow, winding path into the cemetery. Several ancient trees grew among the gravestones, towering cedar and looming pine. As soon as we reached the edge of the cemetery, Tatsumi broke away from the path and slipped into the shadows thrown by the giants. Gaki shambled among the gravestones. I kept my head down, but saw them in my peripheral vision, their naked, bloated bodies shining grotesquely in the moonlight. My heart pounded, but as Tatsumi had predicted, they paid us no more attention than the falling leaves, though a few passed frighteningly close. Once, Tatsumi pulled me roughly against a tree, pressing us both into the bark as a Gaki lurched around the trunk, barely missing him. For a few heartbeats, it stood just a few feet away, raspy breaths hissing into the air, scanning the area as if it could sense something was close. I closed my fingers around my tanto and squeezed my eyes shut, not daring to move or even breathe. My heart pounded, and I pressed myself as far from Tatsumi as I could, hoping he wouldn't feel the lacquered case tucked into my furoshiki. If he found the dragon's scroll now, a graveyard full of hungry ghosts would be the least of my concerns. Finally, the Gaki's footsteps staggered away, and I felt Tatsumi relax.
Move,
he whispered to me, and we did, slipping away from the trunk and weaving our way past the gravestones. As we ducked between two pine trees, something glinted in the corner of my eye, causing me to halt and grab Tatsumi's sleeve.
Tatsumi-san,
I whispered. I think I see the monk.
Over there.
He followed my pointing finger. At the farthest end of the graveyard, a lone headstone stood in the shadow of three enormous cedars. A beam of moonlight slanted through the tree branches, illuminating the headstone and gleaming off a staff with metal rings at the top.
The monk's grave, I whispered, as with a ghostly shimmer, a section of moonlight detached from the headstone and stepped into view.
The Yurei monk, in his straw hat and still holding his metal rod, met my gaze over the stones and raised an ethereal eyebrow.
He sees us,
Tatsumi growled. A piercing shriek made my blood run cold, and a gaki hurled itself over a headstone, jaws gaping like a rabid wolf. Tatsumi spun, Kamigoroshi clearing its sheath in an instant to strike the spindly body from the air. But his hand came free of my grip, and I felt the tearing of magic as the spell dissolved, like a stone hurled through a spiderweb. All through the cemetery, gaki were turning to look at us, eyes blazing bright with hunger, their hisses and shrieks rising into the air. Tatsumi stepped forward, the cold, purple light of Kamigoroshi washing over the stones, matching the chilling look in his eyes.
Go, he told me, swinging the blade in front of him. Talk to the monk. I'll keep them off you for as long as I can.
I looked up at the approaching gaki, torn between running toward the monk and pulling out my tanto to stand with Tatsumi. Fox magic flared, making my hands tingle, and I wondered if a ball of kitsune bee to the face would slow the gaki down, even as it exposed my true nature. As the first gaki drew close, something streaked through the air behind it, striking it in the back. With a shriek, it pitched forward, the shaft of an arrow protruding from its neck, and dissolved into green mist. Another jerked and went careening over a headstone, and a third crumpled to the dirt in a tangle of flailing limbs before writhing into nothingness.
Okame,
I breathed, sparing a quick glance at the top of the hill. I could just make out a lean figure silhouetted on the roof of the shack, just as another gaki screamed and tumbled into the weeds. Tatsumi waited patiently as the first wave drew close, his blade held loose at his side.
Yumeko?
His voice was eerily calm, though I heard a ripple of something terrifying underneath, a barely restrained bloodlust that sent shivers up my spine.
Go.
I went. I darted between headstones and wove between the aisles of rock, searching for that ghostly shimmer of white. It waited for me in the shadow of the trees, standing patiently beside its grave, a bemused expression on its pale, glowing face. I dodged around a headstone to avoid a gaki and winced as its claws raked four white gashes into the rock. It scuttled around the grave, jaws gaping as it reached for me, when an arrow hissed through the air and struck the back of its neck. It dissolved with a chilling wail, and I hurried on. Gasping, I stumbled past the last of the gravestones, darted around a tree, and was abruptly standing before a transparent figure in white.
Well,
the monk's voice was a shiver of an icy wind, the echo of a long-forgotten emotion. His face blurred in and out of reality, like a pebble dropped into the reflection of a pond.
This night has been full of surprises. Hello, little fox. What brings you to my lonely corner of the village?
I drew in a breath. Not surprised that he knew what I really was. He didn't sound like an onryo, the terrible grudge spirit that Tatsumi had spoken of. His voice was calm, pleasant even, and maybe a little sad.
Konbanwa, Yurei-san,
I began, as a shriek rang out behind me in a flash of purple light. Tatsumi was keeping the gaki busy, as he'd promised.
Oh,
I went on anxiously. Is it proper to call you Yurei-san? I haven't spoken to any ghosts before this. His hazy features lowered into a frown, but he seemed more puzzled than angry. I hurried on in case he took offense. Please, Master Monk, I implored, clasping my hands together in a bow. The people here have suffered greatly at the hands of their own loved ones. I've come to ask if you would lift the curse. You were dealt a terrible wrong all those years ago, but none of these people were responsible for your death. And it must be terribly boring, drifting around as a ghost. Surely your desire for vengeance has been satisfied by now.
Ah, little fox.
The ghost of the monk bowed his head.
I wish I could. It was never my intention to place such a powerful curse upon this village. I was angry back then. Though time for me blurs and runs together. I do not know how long it has been since I cursed this village's greed and died with retribution on my lips. I wish only to move on, to complete my journey to Meido, or wherever my soul is destined.
With chilling screams, several more gaki met their ends on Tatsumi's sword. But ominous green lights were beginning to rise from several graves, slowly taking form as more hungry ghosts began to materialize. I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand up, but the yurei didn't seem to notice.
Unfortunately, the curse keeps me tied to this world, the monk continued. I cannot pass on until it is lifted, and I cannot seem to lift it myself. Or perhaps I can, but I've forgotten how.
His shoulders slumped, one ghostly hand lifting to his face.
I'm tired, he whispered. So tired of lingering, of being stuck in this tiny village, surrounded by the monsters I brought into this world. I watch the villagers constantly, hoping one of them will gain the courage to try to lift the curse, but they are too fearful to even approach the graveyard. Not that I blame them.
He glanced at the sky, where a faint pink glow could be seen over the treetops.
Dawn is almost here, he said. The gaki will vanish for another month, and I will continue to haunt this place.
Despair flickered. Can't you do anything? I asked. The ghost shook his head and gave me a sad, resigned look.
You were brave to come here, Kitsune, he said, drawing back. But you are not from this village, and you cannot lift the curse. If the curse can be lifted at all...
Omachi kudasai!
The shout echoed behind me, high-pitched and frantic. I spun and saw a figure running full tilt through the cemetery, arms out and hands clutching something in front of him.
Please wait!
He cried again as I blinked in surprise. The headman? What's he doing here?
Please!
The headman called, his voice drawing the attention of every gaki in the cemetery.
Master Monk, please hear me out.
The gaki snarled and bounded after him. Leaping atop a headstone, a gaki tensed to pounce, but an arrow slammed into its back and it tumbled off the stone with a howl. As the headman passed Tatsumi, one of the hungry ghosts turned and lunged at him, claws grasping. Tatsumi's blade hissed down, severing the gaki in two, but its nails still tore a bloody gash across the man's neck. He staggered, nearly falling, but regained his footing and came on. I stepped back as the headman reached us, instantly falling to his face on the ground.
Forgive us, Master Monk,
he cried, holding up the thing he'd been carrying, a full bowl of rice.
We were wrong to let you suffer so. We will never again let any traveler starve as you did, please.
He held the bowl even higher, even as he stayed prostrate in the dirt.
Accept this as a token of our regret. Or if your vengeance requires it, I will offer my own life for the rest of the village.
Turn me into a Gaki. Drag me to Jigoku. It matters not. Whatever you need to do to pass on and leave us in peace.
Heart in my throat, I looked at the monk. He gazed down at the headman with a stunned expression. Behind us, the Gaki shrieked and howled as they flung themselves at Tatsumi, and the hiss of arrows continued as Okame picked them off one by one, but both the headman and the monk seemed to have forgotten all about them. Then the monk smiled, and a single silver tear ran from his eye, writhing into mist as soon as it hit the ground. That was all I wanted, he whispered. One bowl of rice, a single offering of kindness. But even in the face of cruelty, I should not have let my anger consume me so. This has become my punishment as well. His expression became peaceful, and he bowed his head. I think we have all suffered enough. The cries of the Gaki faded. I looked around the cemetery to see that the hungry ghosts were standing motionless, looking lost. Even those that had been fighting Tatsumi stopped moving, their arms dropping to their sides and their faces lax. As I watched, they shimmered, becoming transparent as they started to fade. A glowing ball of blue-white light rose from each of their bodies, filling the air until the entire cemetery glowed with ethereal luminance. Left behind, the shells of the Gaki disappeared, writhing into mist that disappeared on the breeze. Arigato. I looked back at the monk as he whispered the words. He was fading too, his ghostly form becoming fainter and fainter as he smiled at me. Thank you, he whispered again. You could not lift the curse on your own, but your courage illuminated the way for those who could. May the Kami bless you, and may you never lose that fire that burns within your soul.
Safe travels to you, Master Monk, I said. May your journey to the other side be swift and clear, and may Jinke light your way so that you will never stumble. He bowed to me, and a moment later became a glowing sphere of light that floated into the air, joining the rest. For a moment, they hovered overhead, almost too bright to look at. Then, as one, they scattered, flying to every corner of the heavens, becoming smaller and smaller until they turned into distant stars and were lost from sight.
Part 3. 20. Blood Magic. Lady Satomi was back. And from what Tsuki could see, she was not happy. Useless minions, she muttered, standing in the center of a small, horrifying room. A single candle flickered on a low table, and a cracked, full-length mirror stood in the corner, reflecting the room's grisly state. The walls were streaked with old blood, the floor stained with dark, unidentifiable patches. Lady Satomi stood there, stunning in blue robes patterned with cranes and dragonflies, her hair perfectly styled and held in place with ivory combs. She looked supremely out of place in the center of the gruesomeness, except for what she held in her hand. The head of a large crow lay cradled in her palm, dripping blood between her fingers to spatter the edges of her robes. The body of the bird lay in the center of the table, a small knife resting beside it in a pool of blood. Tsuki could barely look at the still twitching corpse, having had to leave the room when the actual deed was performed. Though being able to go through the walls made that easier, at least. Lady Satomi's eyes were closed, a frown stretching her full lips, as if she was watching something she found distressing. Finally, she let out a huff and opened her eyes.
Two Kamaitachi, one wind witch and a giant demon bear, she grumbled,
tossing the severed head to the table, where it landed beside its cooling body. And Kazekira still couldn't manage to kill them and take the scroll piece. Sliced to bits by her own familiar